the water supply is low on the east side of the mountain, then Northern's board sets the quota annually in April. They set it high so that we'll have water to bring over. So what we were doing was recognizing that, yeah, we know 1 acre foot per unit is more than the average, but it's what we really get in a drought. And that's what matters. The drought year is what really defines everything.
So the 0.9 is because of storage then?
0.9 is that our own modeling, as it's been updated, is showing that we're not getting the benefit of 1 acre foot per unit. It's a really a little bit lower. It's 0.9 acre foot per unit. It's still higher than 0.7, but it's lower than 1. And the numbers work out almost exactly to 0.9 acre feet per unit of yield in that drought year. So that's why we recommend that it go down to 0.9. You have to recognize, though, this has an impact on our cash in lieu, because that means whatever number you set here is divided by 0.9. Right now, it's divided by 1, which doesn't affect it. But when you apply that 0.9 factor, cash in lieu will go up.
With a pretty good water year this year, what's the factor been this year, do you know?
The quota this year, I think it's 0.7 this year.
Is it 0.7?
Uh-huh.
I think they raised it a short time ago to 0.8.
They might have.
Northern did.
Yeah, they may have. It's 0.7, 0.8 is very typical to see those numbers. Occasionally you'll see 0.5 when it's really wet and we have a huge snowpack and everything, they'll cut it. By contract, they have to set at least a 50% quota because of power generation in the system. But on a dry year, the quota gets higher. And if it's really dry, you'll see 100% quota. You get a full acre foot.
And on the, with the city ordinance of based on 100-year drought, statistically, when you run your model, that only happens every 100 years, and surrounding that we don't care about. So we're just basically looking at a 1 year model out of 100 years?
Well, we take all this data and we know what defines a 1 in 100 year drought based on a long period of hydrology. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it happens to look a lot like 2002. So we run the model and keep adding demand and adding demand until it fails, until we have a shortage. But in the year that fails, we then have defined what our firm yield is, and we can look then at what the various sources of water have provided in that model run. And in this case, the CBT would have provided 0.9 acre feet per unit that we have. Did that answer you?
Okay. Let me ask you separately, it's something else.
Okay. Here's another thing that we've handled before. The ditch credits tend to change a little over time. There's new data, there's new diversion data for the ditches, and we have wet years, we have dry years. And with each version of the Raw Water Master Plan, we've taken a fresh look at what the ditch credits should be. And we're recommending to you that we consider following what the model is showing these credits actually would be. And this is derived out of the modeling. What's done is we take the model under a base load condition, and then we add a hypothetical amount of water from a ditch and see how many shares that would take, and we can then see what adding that does to the firm yield at the end of the model run. And you can divide that by the number of shares, and you come up with a yield per share. In this case, we have 4 active ditches that we still accept water from. The Barnes and Chubbuck Ditch are on this list because we still have credits in the water bank described as Barnes and Chubbuck, but we cannot accept these anymore under contract with the GLIC. But we need a credit number for them because people are still using those credits. So here's what's happened. This column right here shows what our current credits are for all of these 6 ditches. And this center column right here shows what the yields are under the newer model runs. Now, this is referred to as the average yield. And what that's meaning is, on an average yield basis, this is what those will yield. But attaining the average yield means they need to be stored somehow, somewhere within the city's system. These numbers over here are what the same shares would yield to the city. They're called the firm yield without any storage. If they just came online directly and all we could do is take them directly out of the river and into the water treatment plant. This is an option that currently exists in the code. If someone does not want to pay the storage fee, which we'll be talking about a little later, they can choose to do this, but it's cost effective to do this. I don't think we've ever had anyone make this choice, but it's there in case someone wants to do it. So what we're looking at is, I think four of them went down slightly and two of them went up. And we see that there's variation, variability over time. The Barnes Ditch down slightly, 0.01 acre foot per inch. Not a whole lot of difference there. The Big Thompson Ditch of Manufacturing has a large number of acre feet per share, but it did go up about, I wish I had the numbers here, but 2.5, it looks like, roughly acre feet per share. So that one's a little bit higher. Buckingham has gone down some, from 6.36 to 5.76. Chubbuck is down slightly, 0.04 inches or acre feet per inch. And by the way, for anyone that's not familiar with it, an inch is a miner's inch. It's an antiquated way of measuring water. It doesn't have anything to do with an inch in a foot on a ruler. Well, not directly. It's just a way of measuring a flow of water and amount of water.
And there are different miner's inches across the West.
Oh my, right here in our own valley, this ditch and this ditch have different definitions for a miner's inch. But there is a statutory definition in the state. It's 38.4 inches equals 1 cubic foot per second, or the inverse, 0.026.
Whoa, say that again.
38.4 inches equals 1 cubic foot per second in Colorado. In most states, it's defined as 40 inches equals 1 CFS. In one state, it's defined as 50 inches equals 1 CFS, and one or two states define it as 30. So it's all over the board. But even in our own valley, before the state even had that statute, the ditches were, you know, these guys were out here digging ditches with shovels and horses, and they had to have a way to measure the water, so they'd come up with a way, build a box and cut a slot in it this size and define that as X number of inches on their ditch. So these guys did, and they did not do it the same way. So they're different. It's just a little history. But anyhow, the Chubbuck went down slightly, 0.04 CFS per inch. The Loudoun is down a little bit, from 12.17 to 11.92, and the south side is up some, 4.55 to 4.97, so an increase there.
Over what period of time are you averaging these yields?
Over the entire period of the model runs, so 1951 up through, I think it's 2016. So we're looking at all of that. We add in new data as we can each time, you know, and the next time we do this, we'll have another few years to add on to it.
And I'm guessing some of these ditches are seeing less deliveries just because property's coming out of production.
Yeah, we try to adjust for that. So we're getting a true yield for the uses on the ditches for shares that we might get. So, because the city's transferred a lot of these shares out already.
You know, based on your previous comment, when I was studying dynamics up at CSU in the 1960s, the professor there was a very old man, and I wish I could remember his name now, but he was the one, and it's named after him, he was the one that invented the weir.
Ralph Parshall.
He was an amazing guy. He wore lace boots. And he was always wearing a suit and tie and everything. And he was an amazing, when he wrote on the board, his hand was always wiggling, you know. But we loved him. He was a great guy.
I didn't get to meet him, but I've certainly heard a lot about him.
Oh, yeah.
Eric, can you remind me why the city does not accept reorganized farmer's ditch?
When we were putting together our last transfer application in 2009, 2008, right in there, it ended up in a decree being issued in February of 2010. As a process of doing that, we were going through all of the ditches. We did analysis on each of the ditches. We like to do ditch-wide rather than farm-by-farm, and that's the way the court prefers it. And that way, if different people are bringing different applications in, you have kind of a common basis for your applications. And as we analyzed the farmer's ditch, it has a pretty high yield. If you just look at the head gate diversions from the river and the number of shares there, it's around 80 acre feet of water per share, which sounds pretty good. But what we ran into is there are quite a number of contract rights that are carried in that ditch. Some of them are very senior water, number one water. But you run into real problems in the water court when you're trying to move contract water. What that means is somebody somewhere gained ownership of a water right somehow and moved it from another ditch. But it was being delivered to an individual on an individual farm, not to the shareholders down the ditch. Over time, what's happened on the farmer's ditch, it appears anyway, is that most of these contract users had stopped using the water on their own farms or whatever it was. I think there was a mill out there, you know, different things. And the water had, over time, accrued to the shareholders, and they were using it. But those contracts are still valid. And as we dug into that farther and farther, we kept having to say, well, we can't take that one, and here's another one. And pretty soon, a great deal of the yield was gone, and we were only going to be able to offer credit that was nowhere near what the street value appeared to be. And we finally just said, we're going to stop. There's no use putting any more effort into this one. So we actually took it out of the decree, just removed it altogether. And that was why.
Can I ask a silly question?
No.
These numbers are all over the board. In terms of, if you take an acre foot of water, are you, when all is said and done, are you end up paying about the same price for an acre foot with all these different methodologies, or is it very, is what you're getting really very dependent upon the ditch you get it from?
It varies a lot depending on the source, and that's one of the things that we do in our long-range planning. We're seeing CBT prices now pushing $40,000 there. I think there have been at least a few individual transactions that have actually exceeded $50,000 now. We've heard, but that's still not official anywhere. It's not recorded. And
but I guess, and maybe follow your answer with, you know, how the ditch credit market in the water bank too, right? Because I think there's a price of a share in the open market, and then there's these are ditch share credits in the water bank, which is kind of a different entity.
I'm not
sure
which we're getting at.
Yeah,
I'll try to answer both questions. The ditch shares, as we take them in, this is the number of acre feet that we'll recognize for a single share. And once that's in there, it can be applied anywhere that the owner wishes to do it. But as far as the value of that water in dollars, is that what you're asking about?
Yeah.
Okay. CBT water is real high. These other sources of water typically are considerably less expensive to buy, to purchase on an acre-foot basis. But you're not done when you acquire them. And we rarely have ever bought these. These are generally brought to us by developers saying, I own some land. It has this kind of water on it. I'd like to give this to you to meet my raw water requirement. And so we'll take it, usually without any monetary transaction taking place there, but we'll take the ownership of it, put it in the water bank, and when we've accumulated enough of it over a few years, we'll file an application with the water court and then try to get a decree which allows the city to use it. We cannot take that water and take it up to our water treatment plant and use it until we have a decree. So if we own it 10 years before we go to court, it's either going back to the owner who might still be farming their land, or hopefully going down that ditch, somebody needs to be using it to keep the use up on the water and keep it active. But we have to go to the court, get it transferred so that we can use it. And even then, it'll only provide water during the irrigation season. The demands that we're trying to meet for that developer on that piece of land are 12 months out of the year. It has to be stored somehow. And that's why we have this storage fee that we'll come to in a little bit, is trying to take care of that aspect of it too. So when you're comparing one to the other in dollars, you've got to look at market value of whatever these are. If you can determine that, that's always an elusive number, but you can usually get somewhere near it. And then you've got to look at the cost of transferring, and that's a number that can vary considerably depending on the case and that kind of thing. And then you've got to look at storage. You add all of those things up, and that's the number you can compare to CBT or something like that. So it's a process of trying to balance those out and make your acquisitions wise from a financial perspective and from an operational perspective.
Okay. But add on to what Steve said, when you actually get it down to a price per acre foot, is your goal to match the current CBT price we're paying?
On some of these?
Yeah, when we take shares like
that. I don't believe any of these at the current market value plus projected cost of taking it to water court plus projected cost of storage is still going to be as high as CBT. In the case I mentioned earlier of the home supply, Little Thompson Water District is accepting that water now, and they serve some of those communities down to the south, and it's becoming a substitute for CBT, so we're pushing those prices up. It just depends on what's happening on the market.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just a couple comments. One thing I think that you have to keep in mind is that this is an average yield. It's
yes.
Not like the CBT where we're looking at the worst case scenario.
Right. This is an average yield unless it's, I mean, and you'll only get average yield if it's stored.
Mm-hmm. And at least when I came, I remember Albert DeAlman and Lynn Hammond working on these problems, and they had a lot of different ways of looking at the ditch. They throw out some of the lower yields, mm-hmm. and some of the higher yields, and then try to average over some of their different periods. It's just a straight average.
Yeah. What they were doing at that time was giving credit based on a 20-year running average. They threw out the worst of the 20 years, the lowest yield of the 20 years, and then averaged the next two lowest, and then they said, that's the credit we'll give. That was just the methodology they used at that time.
So I have a second grade question. So how do we store it when we take ditch shares and we take water and we agree to do it and we want to store it? It's our responsibility to store it, right?
Yes.
How do we physically store it?
Physically, we put it in Green Ridge Glade. However, we need to remember that when we built Green Ridge Glade, that was for the water we already owned. So if we acquire a lot more of this, we probably need to be storing it in some other place because it would be displacing water we already have stored there. Another option that I think may make sense down the road, it doesn't yet, but may make sense, if Chimney Hollow is completed and online and operational, because of how Loveland's situated relative to the system, we may want to look at going back through the NEPA process on our own and seeing if we can store native water in Chimney Hollow in addition to the Winnegap water, something like that. It could be that at some point we need another smaller reservoir somewhere upstream. We've got the reservoir downstream that we could put water in, but we need to be, storage is the name of the game. We need to always be thinking about that on any of these transactions. The nice thing about CBT is it's already stored. All we have to do is pick up the phone and order.
It comes through the CBT system, but it's not CBT water company.
Okay.
I guess that's what
I'm, yeah. Anyway, that's something to think about this month, is should we adjust those?
I'm sorry to interject and maybe confuse things, but the other component of changing the ditch share credit is that there are holding receipts throughout the city or throughout the country. There's companies that have put water in the water bank. When the city council modifies ditch share credit, which has occurred after raw water master plan, that applies to holding receipts that people have that have not cashed in.
Right.
And it's spelled out in the water bank agreement. So some of these, you know, where you see a share yield increased, those holding receipts upon, you know, enactment of this ordinance jump in value based on the acre foot credit of that receipt. Some of them will decrease. And so that's, you know, obviously a decision that's spelled out in the agreement that their deposit of the share is dependent on the determination of credit that's in effect at the time they cash it in. But that is a pretty impactful municipal code provision that will affect, you know, people who hold shares in the water bank that have not yet cashed them in, which I think is 4,000 acre feet, something like that.
Well, it's 4,000 acre feet total. That includes cash credits, okay, and CBT. So I don't remember how many acre feet of native. I don't know if Nathan has that on top of his head or not, but probably in the neighborhood of, what, a couple thousand acre feet, half of that, roughly. Yeah, the city has never given the yield, awarded the yield, I guess is the word, at the time somebody deposits water. It's only when, in the water bank, it's only when they decide to use it for some subdivision. So putting it in the water bank leaves it subject to whatever happens up and down on the yields until the moment they actually use it. And what applies is what's in effect at that time. It can be better, it can be worse than it was when they made the deposit.
So how are these holders of these holding receipts informed of this process, and do they have an opportunity to speak to this process when this recalibration occurs?
You know, we have not sent out formal formal announcement of this. Word gets around very well with most people, but we do have accounts where we're not sure where they are, who they are, that type of thing. So
I remember several years ago when we were readjusting these, about 8-10 years ago, and we had a public meeting down at the police and courts building. And we had a number of people, developers and other holders of those holding receipts, show up and provide input or have an opportunity to speak to it. So do we have a process in mind?
They'll find out when they come in to talk about development.
Well, I mean, this process that we're going through right now is noticed, and most people who have holdings in the water bank become aware of it through that process. But that isn't a formal mailing them a letter type notice, which, you know, could be a good process. They do acknowledge that, though, when they deposit water, that it could go up and down. So it shouldn't necessarily be a surprise. Here we're talking about the storage fee. And we have at least one methodology that we're proposing here. You can think about this. And if you have something you'd like to bring up, you know, next month or something as an alternative, that would be fine. We'd like to discuss it, but our current storage fee is based upon an average cost of $6,000 per acre foot. However, the numbers are adjusted because some of the ditches are, you know, more senior or relatively junior to each other. A junior ditch means it's diverting water a shorter period of time in the summer, and it needs more storage to spread the water out over 12 months. A senior ditch might be providing water 5 months instead of a junior one that provides water 2 months out of the year. And so you don't need to store as much to meet the annual year-round demand. And so there's been an adjustment made, and these, let's see, here are the current fees that have applied on a per acre foot basis. Now these fees do not apply when people deposit water in the water bank. They apply when the water is actually applied to a raw water need, the same time the the yield number applies. So if a developer has water that may have been in the bank for a number of years and they decide they want to use it, we look at the credit that applies, and then we look at the storage fee that would apply, and that's due at that time. But these average out to $6,000 here on the storage fee currently. So those are the numbers that have been in effect, I guess, since 2012. And what we have talked about here is maybe we need to base this on something a little differently. I guess what I could explain is this. The $6,000 number wasn't just pulled out of the air. What we did at the time, those really started about 2005, was we looked at at CBT market prices, which was at that time about $11,000 per acre foot. We also talked to some different brokers and people on some of the ditches and tried to come up with a typical number for the value of native water on the ditches, and that seemed to be about $5,000 an acre foot. We said, why don't we just make the storage fee the difference between the value of the native water and the value of the CBT water, $6,000, knowing that that wasn't really enough to provide all the storage, but it was a step in the right direction. So that was the philosophy that was applied. Since then, CBT prices have skyrocketed, as we've noticed. Ditch prices have gone up, but they are not following quite as high as CBT prices. And one thing that we suggested here is, what if we look at something that's being built, some storage that's being built, and we actually know what the projected cost will be. Chimney Hollow is projected currently at just under $7,000 per acre foot of built storage. Not firm storage, but built storage. 1 acre foot is just under $7,000. Now, we do know that Chimney Hollow enjoys the benefits of scale. If Loveland was trying to build a smaller reservoir like Green Ridge Glade, it would probably be a higher number somewhere, but at least it's something you can look at. And so what we proposed was, let's look at that number, let's call it $7,000, and let's apply that number. So we would take the average from $6,000 to $7,000 on the storage fee, and then we did the adjustment that looked at the relative seniority of the various ditches, and you do that by looking at the firming ratios. A firming ratio is the number of acre feet of space, of storage, that it takes to create 1 acre foot of firm yield. So you've got to store water up and keep it over the years, and in that drought year, you need, you know, in the case of most of these, it's in the neighborhood of 2.6 acre feet of water stored to get through that drought. So that's your firming ratio. But what we're proposing was, let's use the $7,000 number and apply that. Here are the firming ratios that apply to the various ditches. We actually weighted these by the number of shares that are out there that it's likely over time the city might acquire, because it's different amounts of water in the various ditches. But doing that, we came up with these numbers right here. And as you can see, in some cases they're pretty close, in other cases there are some differences, but these are the differences out here. It seemed like a reasonable way to approach this and come up with a number that makes some sense. It's still not enough probably to build storage if Loveland was building it itself, but it's certainly a step in the right direction. So these basically comprise our recommendation at this point. And again, if you want further discussion on that, please let us know. We can talk about whatever you'd like.
Just a question, what's the likelihood someone downstream may want to buy that water instead and move it elsewhere?
Are you talking about our reusable effluents, or what do you mean?
No, I mean these dish shares are still out there that the city doesn't have.
Oh, so you mean another Thornton kind of a situation or something like that?
Yeah. I think when you start looking at the costs, to whoever may be wanting to use this water, he has to sort of also think about
what's it worth to someone else?
Might want it somewhere else. And what's it worth us to keep it?
Keep it here. That's certainly a good point. I have heard, not recently, but in the past, of municipalities along the northern tier of Denver looking in our basin. And it could happen. The most likely targets are the ones with a lot of storage. And in those cases, GLIC, for instance, is more than half owned by Greeley and on farms. Home Supply, at least a third of that's been transferred by the town of Johnstown. I don't know if a community would be, you know, somebody from 50 miles south, that was 40 miles south, would be interested in trying to work into a situation there or not. I don't know. They've certainly gone to the Boone River, we know that, water supply and storage, but they're much larger companies that have seemingly been the targets. As prices go up and values increase, anything could happen. And
well, stuff that, kind of thinking about these developments further east, where a lot of houses are going east and they don't have surface water, and they're going to have probably augmentation water.
Mm-hmm.
For well, yeah. This looks like the source.
It might be, yeah. And then the question then becomes, how do you put a value on that?
Yeah. A few years back, they were talking about a major pipeline from this area down to the south. Is that still
The city of Thornton is certainly working on a major pipeline, looking at routes and all, because they started acquiring water in 1985 and went to the water court. Took many years, but they came forth with a decree that allows them to take Poudre River water to Thornton. They do have to make returns too back to the Poudre. They're looking at a large pipeline that would go down. I think they want to come across under I-25 and south on the east side of I-25. They openly state they're looking for partners. If anybody's wanting to move water up and down, make it more of a communal type pipeline or something. But that might be what you're thinking of. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So thinking or that process is still in place?
Oh yes. Yeah, but okay. It's just a matter of cost and as you can easily imagine, easements and rights of way are extremely difficult now.
It's got to be terribly expensive to do that.
Is the firm ratio a calculation developed by Loveland, or is that typically what other water utilities use on the firm range?
The firming ratio, these actually come out of the Spronk report. And I think it's table, if I remember right, 8.2.
So that's a calculation they use, and they use with other people.
Well, they calculate these so we'll know what they are. And, in other words, they're looking at what would it take on storage to store this water. Let's say that they use an increment of 500 acre feet to evaluate these. They said, what if we acquired 500 acre feet of water for Loveland? How many inches is that? They look at the yield number. And in the case of the farms, I forget, we had that up a minute ago, but it was 2.8 or 9, some number like that. So they figure out how many inches of barns that is. They run that through the model, and they say, okay, how many acre feet of storage do we have to add to make this?
For the short period that you've got to fill your storage.
Right. So that's where they come up with those numbers.
And you're not recommending an average of 7,000. You're recommending that storage fee per each ditch.
We're recommending this one here. This is what they currently are.
Okay.
We're recommending that we probably need to, the basis for this is no longer in existence. Okay. The prices have changed. Maybe it makes sense to tie it to something that's defined.
It's very rational what you got there.
Larry, I wonder if we shouldn't also have a provision here for annual increases for this, maybe tie it to our bond interest rate.
Yes. In fact, that's one of the things we've talked about. This has been hardwired into the code, and it might make more sense if these numbers became part of our rates, charges, and fees instead of in the code, because those are adjusted annually, at least for inflation or something like that. And probably should add that as a recommendation, but we've been talking about that at the staff level, because actually, we tried it 2 or 3 years ago and added on an inflationary number and found out it wouldn't work. We couldn't do it because of the way it was written into the code. There was no provision for that. So
we've never had litigation over any of this stuff ever.
Okay, Larry, I hate to say this, but we're going to run out of time, so we might want to avoid the rabbit holes if we can.
All right, okay. Okay, cash in lieu policy. Now, we talked about cash in lieu a little bit earlier, so let me run through this quickly. So far, we're saying cash in lieu is fine, and that's because we have a project. We need to build Chimney Hollow up there. And so we have a place to take the money that would come in as cash in lieu. We can continue using our existing method, keeping the price tied to the CBT market value, and we've talked already about what happens with that. It's going up and up, and changing the credit from 1 acre foot to 0.9 acre feet will push that up even more. One of the things we've talked about that may make some sense is to tie this to something else. Tie it to what we're actually paying for at this time, which is Chimney Hollow Reservoir. And right now, it takes about 2.6 acre feet in Chimney Hollow to provide a firm acre foot of yield. So if you take that $8,000 or $7,000 number per acre foot that's being that the current price is, and apply the firm yield ratio, you come up with about $18,200 and some. It's much lower than our current cash in lieu. It's about half. Does that make sense? I mean, it's just something we want to throw out there. It's something to chew on. And if we don't want to do that, what do we want to do? Do we want to keep doing this? Do we want to do something else? But this seemed like perhaps a reasonable approach, and we wanted to put it out there for discussion.
Just a question on that. If you're moving towards that methodology, wouldn't you also want to include the cost for the Great Western Reservoir?
We could add it in, yeah.
I mean, that's what you're trying to.
That's a good point. Add another approximately $5 million to the price and then divide it out. So, yeah. We could make that adjustment and be happy to do that before the next meeting.
So if you did that, is that a big change? That's a big change for people coming in?
Not a great deal, I'm not sure, but it would make a few hundred dollars difference probably.
Okay. So it's explainable to people that will listen.
Mm-hmm.
Acceptable.
But it's a big change. It's cutting
it
cash in lieu in half.
I think it's a defensible change.
Mm-hmm.
It's a defensible
it's
change.
It's defensible, okay.
Mm-hmm. And it would meet the question we received from council last
night.
Yeah.
They were asking us, how can we make housing less expensive? That would be a step in the direction towards that.
And so very defensible in that respect, yeah.
Let's see. Basically, here we're just talking about the storage. We have storage coming upstream, we have storage coming downstream, and you know, the recommendation obviously is we need to finish both of those. We're well into both of those projects, Chimney Hollow upstream, the Great Western Reservoir downstream. And then there's a bullet here. And we've talked about this already. Are there other things we need to do as far as any storage? As we take ditch shares, do we need a place to put it? Should we look at any other options that come along? In other words, just keep your eyes open is what we're kind of saying there. And be aware if we see something that looks like it will help the city, we need to evaluate it.
So, Larry, when we went through that process 10 plus years ago to identify potential storage sites.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we got that down to, was it the maintenance site?
Eventually it came down to that one site was the only one that looked feasible.
Yeah. Is that anywhere in this, or is that still out there as a potential, or?
That could be on that bullet there, you know, if you want it to be there. At the time we were coming up, and we did update the numbers, and I'm sorry, I can't remember, but at the time we were coming up with a firm yield cost of $17,000 and change per acre foot. Now that was 9 or 10 years ago, And I can't remember, it's in the 20-some thousand dollar range now at that site, but, you know, depends on how much the acquisition of the site is. There's a lot of unknowns out there. So, but we, you know, we compared that to 7 additional sites, starting with about 64, 65 sites down, winnowed it down. So that was an option. Reusable supplies. This reservoir at downstream at Great Western, the Great Western site, will help us do this. This is not something we're able to do on any sort of sustained basis now. We have rarely done it when there's a day when we can take water that's coming out of the wastewater treatment plant that's reusable and exchange it upstream. But if we had the water stored down there, you can watch the river, you can match your outflow to what's available in the river and move water upstream. So that's the real value of having the reservoir downstream. And it adds quite a bit of water to our fern yield, but it's management intensive. It's something that people will really have to watch. And also then leasing or selling to downstream users. You remember the augmentation policy that we went through 3 or 4 months ago, something like that. Certainly, we think that's a wise policy. We need to continue that, but also it might be possible that this downstream storage will help us implement situations where that would work. And we don't want to let this go away, because in the right circumstances, it makes a lot of sense, and that is the parallel purple pipe, in other words, raw water irrigation system. We evaluated this in about 2008, I think, somewhere back in there, Arbor Engineering, you might recall. And at the time, it just didn't quite make sense. But the idea was to collect water at the wastewater treatment plant in a reservoir like the one we have now at Great Western Reservoir, pump it up, stage it, and irrigate greenbelt areas up above, or common public areas or something upstream. We couldn't make the cost less than just using treated water. It just cost enough more that it would have to be subsidized. And at that time, the council said, just keep your eye on it. If it ever becomes feasible some way, somehow, let us know. So we want to keep it before ourselves here so that we don't forget about that possibility. And here's the list. This is basically the end, but it's what we're talking about. In the document that you have before you, these are in Section 8, recommendations, and you can look at those, but there's discussion about each of those earlier in the document in Section 7, primarily, is where those are evaluated and looked at. And if you have questions during the month on something, please call, and we'll certainly... I'd be happy to sit down with anyone if you have any questions or comments or concerns or anything like that, and try to answer anything I can. And happy to do it. We want this to be something that you'll feel good about making your recommendations that we can take forward on the City Council.
Larry, are you going to talk about the CBTU cap issue?
CBTU
cap issue. Are you going to discuss that tonight?
Oh, yeah, I should have brought that up. Yes.
One cash and loo question.
Yeah, this, I'm glad you brought it up. We put it on there so you would know. We have talked, thank you, I don't know why I didn't think of that. We put a notice on there that, pursuant to a request from you, I guess last month, I missed last month's meeting, but somebody wanted us to look at the cap calculation. We had a letter on file from Eric Wilkinson, based on a previous calculation of the city's CBT cap, and it was over 5,000 acre feet that could be acquired according to that letter and according to the calculations that were done at that time. We've gone through the calculations again. We've met with the district staff now and come back looking over some things. But there have been a lot of changes that have occurred in the way that's calculated, in the economic condition around us, and it has resulted in This is not final. We don't have a final letter yet, and we are probably going to be meeting once more with the staff, but it's looking like Loveland is probably capped. What that means is we would be unable to go buy any more CBT as long as that cap applies. This is a snapshot in time. It will change next year, perhaps, and maybe the numbers would look more favorable. It does not mean we cannot take CBT water if a developer brings it for a subdivision or some sort of development. We can still acquire CBT that way, but it takes away the option of being able to go out on the market and buy CBT outright and bring it in. So it's not official, but that looks like where we're finding ourselves. And there are a number of reasons for that. One of the things that happened because this is a big change, and I want to give you some idea of what's happened. Previously, the calculation allowed us to use the highest year of demand, and then use that in the calculation. We used 15,104 acre feet then. Now, the calculation, as it is recognized by Northern's regulations, allows only the average demand for the last 10 years to be used, and that number is quite a bit lower, 13,370 acre feet. There's a difference of 1,700 acre feet right there. Then there are commitments to serve. Commitments to serve mean platted lots that we've agreed to serve that are not yet built. And in 2010, when we did this before, obviously recognize that we were in the recession of 2008, hadn't come out. There were empty subdivisions sitting all around town, and we had over 3,000 taps that we had committed to serve that weren't online. They let us use those. Now we're less than half of that, and I think it's just a sign that things are going and things aren't sitting. They're being built out and going. We went through a couple of methods of looking at the city's yields. One of the things that's made quite a bit of difference is how much we're actually using. We talked earlier tonight about the gallons per capita day being lower. That means our demand's lower to apply against this. That's made quite a bit of difference. There are just several factors that have come to bear, and we've gone from positive to negative on this cap calculation. It certainly looks like. I will let you know when we get some sort of a letter or something that's official, but the current numbers that we're looking at have us slightly over 1,000 beyond what we're supposed to be capped at right now. They don't take it back, but they're saying that we've got more than enough already.
That same cap on Fort Collins and
Fort Collins, Greeley, and Longmont have all been capped for years.
Okay.
We've been the only one that wasn't of the major cities up north here.
We can't go back to don't ask.
No. Well, actually, along the lines of that, I should share with you. I kind of asked that question. Is it how did this come about? Because this is a big change. What happened? And that's where we went through all of these numbers. But a lot of you probably know Sherry Rasmussen. She handles most of the transactions down there at Northern and knows where most of the 310,000 units are. And Sherry was explaining to us that, I lost my train of thought.
Everybody has a cap.
Yeah, there you go, thank you. Every single entity has a cap out there. And they had started through a process of evaluating those. And I said, well, does that mean you were going to be evaluating Loveland at some point? And she said, yes. She said, the next time you came in to ask for a transfer, you would have been evaluated. And they're catching them as they go, but they're enforcing these, and they always have. This is not new. They always have, but what's new are some of the numbers that I've described to you.
Are the shares for sale shares that have never, ever been sold by CBG?
Not necessarily. They can be units that are coming off of a farm or from some industry or from one farmer to another farmer or one city to another city. If that happens, it could be anywhere. But every entity that's contemplating a purchase of CBT water has a cap. Farmers have a cap. They'll evaluate the native water that's on a farm, look at the acreage, and say, you've got this much native water, you can only have this much CBT. And, you know, that's, none of this is new. It's been through the history of the project. We've always, it's an anti-speculation move, I think, is the way to describe it.
So just kind of a well thought here. Would this development be something that we want to consider incentivizing developers to bring us CBT as a way to get more CBT into our system, notwithstanding that cap?
Yeah, that thought's gone through my mind. And, you know, if you want to think about that this month, that'd be a good topic to talk about. Is there something we should do that would incentivize that? But I can tell you that at least from what I'm hearing from some of the other entities, it's getting really hard to find those CBT units.
So anybody got a graph of the annual turnover of CBT shares?
I think there's one in this report, isn't there?
Oh, there is?
It crosses like that, as far as that's the ownership.
Oh, between municipal and ag?
Right. Yeah, I think that's what you're asking.
Yeah, you're right. Well, kind of, yeah. I'm just wondering how many shares. There's a total of 300,000, right?
310,000.
Mm-hmm. How many are trading per year? Exchanging.
Well, you know, if you look at the transaction reports that we see, there'll be, some of these are cash and some are not. They're paid to an entity for taps, so they don't have a cash value, and we can't use that number when Nathan's doing his work. But if you add them all up, it's not at all uncommon to see 80 to 100 or 150 units per month coming through. And Northern staff will say they think that there's likely in the neighborhood of 20,000 units that would still be likely to come from ag to municipal and industrial. The ownership's higher. I don't know what they're basing their estimates on, but they estimate that there are some areas of ag that will not really have water this day. It's probably higher value ag production of some sort or another, maybe dairies, I don't know. Okay, that's all I have. I know it's a lot to think about, but I think we can have an interesting discussion next month. We certainly appreciate your input. This is your document, our document, and we want to take it together to council, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Good job, Larry.
Yeah. Okay. Commission and council reports. Steve, do you want to start off?
Well, the first off, Larry and Nathan gave a presentation last night on the changing of the rates for new construction. Well done. I think it stimulated good discussion by council, and council made some asks of the staff to look at some options for reducing the cost, and I think some of this could help. The two ballot measures have passed and will go on to will be on the ballot for the citizens 11, one being sale of marijuana within the city limits, cultivation, distribution, processing, sale. I mean, there's a whole list of things. There's three of us voted against it, and six had supported. And then there was considerable discussion last week about the ballot measure for the increased sales tax. And the rub I have is they bundled everything, and they're marketing it as, hey, you know, we got some infrastructure things you could get. And, well, that's 20% of the total revenue that would come in would be infrastructure. The rest of it is amenities. 40% is a direct quote. We ended up pulling the rec club off, and that's going to have a separate ballot, and then everything else is bundled, which not my favorite, but getting the rec club, which is the huge part of this, off it was the thing I was after anyway.
Yeah.
So those are the big issues that were before council, that affects that you might be interested in.
Okay. All right. Mission reports. Richard, do you want to start? Do you have anything that you want to add?
I do not.
Dan?
I have nothing to report.
John?
Nothing this month.
Gene? Yeah, I had talked to Larry before the meeting. Maybe there's some additional input, but been a lot of news items on the algae in the water and so forth. And I was curious as to our reservoir above our treatment.
I will be happy to report on that during the director's report.
Okay.
All right. Well, that was my question.
All right. Randy?
The cross connection program is operating. I had a couple of guys come out from the park.
They take good care of you?
They did.
I am, as with everybody in this department, I am extremely proud of them. That can be a very, very challenging and difficult task. There are some property owners that have issues with that, and in some cases, it is not a trivial amount of money if they have a large tap. So they do a great job. It is a vital part of protecting the water quality in our distribution system, and I think that shop does a really, really good job. So thank you.
Yeah, they were very responsive and very pleasant when they came out.
Super.
Thorough.
Oh, yeah.
They were thorough also, right?
Oh, yes, they were thorough.
They are.
I did have one other question. I'm a good friend with Dr. Davis here in town.
With whom, I'm sorry?
Dr. Davis, she's a dentist.
Mm-hmm.
And she had the water department recently. They, because her dental facility, they test her own water. And apparently they had a high level of some.
I can address that offline. We've done some additional sampling, and I think there may be some ancillary issues not related to water quality. I can talk to you offline about that.
Okay.
Yeah?
Nothing but corn roast this weekend. So,
right. Yeah, come down. You'll be there Friday night?
Yeah, Friday night.
Saturday
morning parade. They still doing the pancake breakfast, Steve?
At the Elks.
Yep. At the Elks. Corn roast, everybody.
So I'm cooking, so come get your corn.
Going to be shucking?
I'm going to be just going down and having a good time. I usually work at that, and I'm not doing it this year. I'm just going to go have fun. So.
Eat corn and drink beer.
The Fair Queen will be there, yes.
Larry?
Well,
there was one thing that I thought about the staff and how they work and how crucial they are to the city of Loveland, and looking out of for health and welfare in the city, and as an LUC member, I'm kind of proud that we kind of watch out for our public and making sure that the water and power are adequate, provided in a manner which doesn't cost them an arm and a leg. So I commend you for that.
Don't look at me. Look at the guys back there and the folks out there and the ones at the plants. They're the ones that do the work. So thank you very, very much, though.
Yeah.
We're very, very proud of
you. Yeah, director's report, you might comment about how our labs come along.
That's right there.
All
WQL.
Right.
A couple of things. One, you have another document for your reading pleasure in front of you, which is the PRPA annual report. I wouldn't necessarily go through the whole thing, but there are some great factual information up front which can give you some background on PRPA. I think they're doing a much better job in terms of the outreach material and making it a lot better formatting. And so it's a pretty good document. Just the other day, we received the this year's check from our friends at CDOT. As you know, this past winter, we had to forego native water rights for a period much less than the previous year. So we calculated that up, and Larry, God bless him, and his folks found some water, and they sent us down the check for that. So we're in really good shape. We're even, Stephen, with CDOT and Kiewit, and I just chatted with the PM from up there, who was just a great guy to deal with. And he's very happy. He's working on a road project that doesn't have anything to do with the river. So he's very happy. An item that Roger has been working on diligently for some time, and I think we're coming around the clubhouse turn and headed into the final stretch, is an IGA, an intergovernmental agreement with Little Thompson Water District. It's going to delineate our boundaries, our relationships across those boundaries. But most importantly, and I think this is something that's going to make a lot of people happy, both in our operations and in our water quality groups, we have pipes with our water that serve Little Thompson customers. Conversely, there are pipes that are Little Thompson water that serve City of Loveland customers. That's been driving Roger crazy for several years now. Three years now, it's been driving him crazy. That will be rectified in this IGA, along with some other things. So it's really good. We're hammering it out. There is a new general manager down there, Amber
Kaufman.
Thank you. Amber Kaufman is the new general manager. She's been their district engineer on staff for a number of years. She is a very, very capable young lady and very amenable, very professional. And so we're working through the final details with her. That'll probably come back in, I'm thinking, a couple, 3 months. We'll finally have all the everything detailed there. The water quality laboratory, the down at the wastewater treatment plant, construction has started on that. The walls are going up. They hope to have it buttoned up so they can work inside over the winter. And they're saying, you know, latter part of April, early May next year for completion, which is really, really good. So that's really good news. The last time I saw a number for the wastewater treatment plant, it was 95, 96, 97%. Mostly it's landscape that needs to be done. We will be having a dedication ceremony, whatever you want to call it, a ceremony of some sort, probably late part of September or early October when the weather cools off a little bit. And we will be having, we'll be inviting the city council as well as LUC and inviting them. So that should be great fun. We'll have cookies and milk at the wastewater treatment plant. That's always a good time. What's that?
Chocolate milk?
No, not chocolate milk.
No Tootsie Rolls?
No Tootsie Rolls. During this period of the year, we monitor, the laboratory staff monitors water quality in both the river and the reservoir all year. During this time of year, starting a few months ago, as the temperature started to come up, they do more aggressive, more frequent sampling, and we get weekly analyses, reports about the algae counts, where the algae is in terms of the elevation, if they've detected any jasmine or anything else, and then they make a recommendation on which gate to pull it from that's going to provide the highest quality water for the treatment plant to produce. Happy to say that all, knock on whatever this is, the reports have been very, very good. No detectable jasmine. There's algae there. There's no question. There's algae there. There always will be. But we haven't seen any explosive blooms or anything. So as far as, and you can only take it week to week, the news all summer has been really, really good. And we're still feeding powdered activated carbon, but only at 1 milligram per liter. To give you an idea, the City of Greeley Boyd Lake plant, you may have seen this in some of the news reports. I think Channel 9 had it, and one of the papers down there had it. I don't know if it was the Post or somebody. The Boyd Lake plant that supplies essentially peaker water to Greeley, under normal conditions, they feed 25 milligrams per liter of powdered activated carbon. This year, because of the higher algae loads in both Lake Loveland and Boyd, which again, that's their water, that's City of Greeley and Greeley Level Irrigation Company. Because of the higher levels, they are feeding in excess of 35 milligrams per liter pack. That's a lot of pack, and that is very expensive. So our folks in our water quality group have done just a tremendous job over the last 3 years trying to get that reservoir under control with the solar bees and everything else. And again, it's another mark. Thank you, Kerry. We should be very, very proud of those folks. So. That's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. So is that all that carbon, is that why they're the gold standard for water?
I'm not even going to get into that one. I refuse to think that they have the best tasting water. I still think it was, you know, Aquafina from the 7-Eleven.
I have
one other comment. I had a client come in that's selling some property in Sterling, and they had to redo their water treatment plant. Mm-hmm. Their base charge is $98. That's their base charge with no gallonage supply.
For residential customers?
Yep.
Holy Moses.
Sterling.
Sterling.
Wow.
Wow.
Is that enough to go up?
I've never seen it that high.
I did have, you know, last month we executed the contract on the pipeline that went from Idle, I think it was Idlewild Dam, on down. And I was up there about a week ago, and they're under construction right now.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I should have mentioned that. Yes, they are. And we're very happy about that.
All right. Anything else? We're adjourned.